Welcome to the Players Podcast. This is Coach Espinoza, joined today by my coach, Jim Litchfield. And Coach, remind me, how many years you spent on the bench?
Well, at McNary, I was at McNary for 21 years. And I spent 2 years at Corvallis with Mike Doherty. So what would that be? That'd be about 23 years.
23 years. And your first one as a head coach was with me.
Yep, 2003.
And I want to start with a personal story because I've always wanted to ask you this. Never asked you this, but my sophomore year, you told me something after tryouts. You said you can quit or you can come to practice harder than anybody else and never play. And I was just curious, is that something you had said before to people, or is it something you rarely said, or was it a one-time thing?
You know, we said things like that to kids that we thought would maybe have a chance to play someday. But at that, you know, that particular stage of their development, they were behind. So, you know, you can cut a kid like that, or you know, if a kid is willing to work hard and believe in themselves and accept their role at that particular stage, then you give them that choice. So like for you, you know, you were the type of kid that we knew that, you know, really loved basketball, and you had a great attitude, and so we just thought, you know, we'll give you a choice and make you, you know, help you decide, let you decide what you want to do. So did we give that choice to a lot of people? No, because that's a really, really hard thing to do. I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing to say it, and I don't know how many kids today can actually go and work hard. Our practices were pretty intense, and your heart rate got up, and there are a lot of times where you would work your butt off, and you know, the reward a lot of the times is to get out and play in the games. And when you're not getting that, the daily grind of practice can be difficult.
It wasn't easy, and I cried a lot early in the season.
Yeah,
but it was positive for me to have to make that decision, because I did love basketball and I wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And I had to decide, was I going to be a part of it, or am I only in it for this or that? So it definitely helped me along the way. Mm-hmm. And I definitely was behind. So it would have been easy for you guys just to cut me as well.
Yep.
I wasn't going to make an impact that year.
Yeah. Well, you know, you find kids that, you know, the kids are at different stages, you know, when they go through high school. I mean, some kids are, you know, they come to you and they're, you know, they're shaven and you know, they're not going to grow. And there's a lot of things that can change over those 4 years. You know, guys, they lose interest in hoops. It seems like every year we always had a kid that was like on the B team in seventh or eighth grade. You know, was a kid that didn't get to play much as a freshman. Another kid comes to mind was Justin Sherwood, who played at Western Baptist and was first team all league as a senior. He was our best player at McNary. And ended up, you know, when he was a freshman, they almost cut him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't get to play a ton as a freshman, but he was really immature, but he worked hard, and you could tell he liked basketball, and so they kept him. And he had the right attitude, and it's a credit to you, Nose. It's not an easy thing to do. It shows a lot of character.
First time I shaved was before my college graduation, so
yeah, there you go.
I had some work to do.
Yeah,
but I appreciate you guys giving me a chance and sticking with me.
Well, it was easy. You're a great guy to have around, and obviously, you know, things worked out.
Something else I picked up from you was like being brutally honest, because when I was a junior, I was playing JV, mm-hmm. and that's not always easy. You know, I was happy to be playing, but at the same time, my peers are playing varsity, and I'm thinking, well, I think I'm playing better than some people in practice. I should maybe get a chance, but I've got a lot of playing time. But you told me midway through that season that I could have a chance to be a impact player on the varsity the next year.
Yep.
If I get in better shape, hit the weight room.
Yep.
And another challenge that probably a hard thing to tell a kid, because you don't want to maybe insult them, but also you got to be honest with, hey, if this is your goal, these are the things you got to do.
Yep.
So,
Yeah, you know, it's a strength. People don't really realize how big of a thing it is. You know, for especially for young players today. It's just, I mean, if you look at the, go look at the best teams in the state, you know, if you go up to the state tournament and you, especially if you're looking at the semis, from the semis on, you know, every one of those kids has got muscle definition and, they're strong. So, you know, being able to be at a point where you're putting on muscle mass, you know, getting yourself into good shape, it helps a lot. And, you know, you improved more than maybe any other kid we've ever had, that, you know, from the standpoint of when you're a freshman, all the way, you know, your senior year, you just got better and better and better. And, you're a big part of our success. There's no doubt about it, but, you changed a lot from that conversation, even to the beginning of the year. You could tell that you were eating right and you were doing the things you needed to do in the weight room. And it wasn't just you. There were a lot of, Wick was getting in the weight room a lot at that time. And so was, Erickson, not so much Ruffner, you know, you guys were, it definitely, there was a culture of getting into the weight room and it just makes you, it makes you better. You can, especially like when you're driving to the hole or there's contact, you can play through the contact, or you can absorb the hit and still, you know, finish the play, where if you're not strong, they just knock you down and there you go, you know? And, you know, it was fun to watch you get better and better.
Those spring workouts after my junior year, going to senior year.
Yep.
Where did that idea come from for you? Because at that time, it was kind of, you know, open gyms or just get together and play, shoot a little bit. There wasn't this emphasis on getting together and working in that manner. We ran stairs. We did weighted lunges. We would do different jumping and shuffling drills. That became a staple for me just working like that in the off season. Yep. But at that time, that was totally new.
I knew I was going to take over the varsity position for that year in the spring, and I had just done, you know, just thought about some things that I thought could make kids better physically. One of my big things I used to say was that, you know, the harder you work for something, the harder you'll fight. And if you invest, it doesn't matter what you're doing, if it's sports or music or whatever, you know, the harder you work at something, the harder you'll fight to you know, see it through. And if you invest the time in it, and then you're going to do the things that need to be done to be successful. And so, again, great group of kids, and everybody kind of bought in, and everybody showed up, and we got a lot better. The speed and the quickness, you know, running stairs and doing the lunges and all of that, you know, it makes you a lot more explosive, and jump higher and do a lot of the different things. But I read a book, actually a couple of them, but on just workouts for basketball. I think one of them was by Doc Rivers, when he was playing ball. He wasn't coaching yet, but some of the different things that he had done, I picked up some things from that book and just other things that I had seen at maybe a clinic or wherever. And, so I thought, well, let's get to work. So we did.
Well, the stairs stuck with me. I did those every year from then on.
Yeah.
And even now, sometimes I'll get out there.
Yeah. Where do you go? Age. Do you go down to...
I used to go to Willamette. They locked Willamette. That up.
Oh, really? Can't get that?
Can't get in there anymore. There's a little staircase down by kind of where the library is, a little riverbank there.
Yep.
And then I ride my bike past one that's on the Mission Street overpass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a good one.
There's a good one there. I saw that. I used to look for, you know, different things that we could go do, because we used to go to Bush Park. I don't know if you remember that, but we went down there a couple of times, and I used to live off of a street at Petty John Street out in South Salem, and That thing is a brute. I mean, it's long. It's about a quarter mile.
You might have caught me and one of my friends.
Yeah. Some of your Willamette buddies. Yeah.
Up that hill. That wasn't easy.
No, it's a long hill, and the last quarter of it, it gets steeper. So it's perfect.
it's a killer.
It's a killer. But, you know, the verticality of the run or the stairs really improves the, you know, makes you more explosive. And so, you know, but it's not pleasant.
No. But it's worth it.
It is. Yeah. If you really want it.
One thing being around you that I always picked up was your love for the game, and maybe not in the sense of like a fandom of like, I've watched all these NBA games, I know all these players, but just your love and appreciation for the game of basketball. Mm. How did that develop? Where did that come from in your life? Take us back to the origins.
The origins of it? Probably when I was a little kid.
You had a basketball family. Your dad played.
Yeah, my dad he played at North Salem in its heyday, and then he played at Willamette on a couple of pretty good teams. They had one team that went back to the Nationals, which was a big deal. But I had a neighbor kid that when we used to live out in Kaiser, the next door neighbor that had a basketball hoop up, and he played for McNary. And we used to go watch him, and sometimes, he and his buddies would come over and they'd play 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, and I would come over and watch. And it was really the first sport that I could actually do. You know, you can do it by yourself. So most of the neighborhood was all girls. So it was just, I was the only guy, and I wasn't going to play dolls. So, but my mom bought a little beach ball type of thing that you get at Fred Meyer's, you know, one of those really light ones. And I would go over to our next door neighbor's house because they had a hoop, and I would just, you know, stand out there and try to huck it up there. And I can still remember my first basket and how excited I was. And I went over and got my mom and made her come over and probably stand there for a half hour before I got enough strength and the wind was blowing the right way to get the damn thing up there. Cause I was 3 or 4. I wasn't very big, but, it kind of started with that, I guess. I can remember watching, games with my dad, on Sunday. They had the game of the week. It was usually the Lakers or Boston was playing. I can remember that. That's going way back. Havlicek was playing, and, JoJo White and Charlie Scott and I don't even think Kareem was playing for the Lakers yet, but we would sit and watch games. There was only one game. I mean, that was it.
Yeah.
There wasn't much on TV, but the Sunday afternoon game was.
You had to catch it.
Yeah. You know, you had 2, 6, 12, 8, you know, those are the only stations that you got, ABC, CBS, NBC, and they had a game. I think it was ABC that put it on, and you couldn't record anything. Yeah. So, you know, you made it an event, and we sat there and we watched the game. So, and then my dad was a season ticket holder for the Blazers. And that was a big deal too. When Blazers came to town, and you said 1970. He and a couple of his buddies bought 4 tickets. So every year I got to go to a few games, and we went to high school games. My dad was a junkie, and I can remember when Vic Backlund was coaching the team at McNary, the basketball team, and we went to South Salem games. And so, you know, I was just exposed to a lot of basketball.
Remember any of the players you watched that played in high school when you were a kid and watching them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you bet. I can remember, you know, you're going, just like everybody else, you know, you're in the fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, and you go to the game, and, then at recess, you want to be that kid when the game starts. So, you can go all the way back to Rob Cantonwine, who was Bob Cantonwine's son. I was at South Salem. That's in the late 70s. You know, he was a great scorer, great shooter. Team wasn't very good, but he could play. They had some teams at South. We moved to South Salem when I was five, so we went to a lot of the South games. But Chris Clemens and Paul Von Ruden and a kid by the name of Johnson, I think, was a pretty good player. And I don't know, there's just a bunch of, you know, pretty good teams. And by the early, late 70s, early 80s, South was pretty good. The program was not real strong in the mid 70s, but by Canton Wine kind of came and turned things around. And they got pretty good.
Well, my kids are the newest fixtures at the South Salem
game,
so maybe they'll be the next you and grow up with the appreciation.
That's what you got to do. Yeah, take them to the games.
We'll see.
Yeah.
When you got into coaching, you were still in college, right?
I was.
Yeah, at OSU.
I was at Oregon State.
And then how did that come about to go to coach at Corvallis?
I just, after my freshman year, you know, it's, you decide to not to play anymore and it's, it leaves a hole, you know, there's, a big, it was a huge part of my life. You know, that's for sure. But then I decided, not to play in college. And so I went to Oregon State and, I don't know. I was missing something. So that next year, when the season started, I thought about trying to play again, but then my dad kind of discouraged me from doing it. He said, just stay at the school. You got buddies, and just do what you do. I'd done a lot of basketball camps. You know, I was a fixture up at Camp Cascade for years. Went as a camper, and then I was a counselor for, you know, several summers. And I'd always liked that part of it. I was pretty good at trying to teach kids certain parts of the game. So I thought that coaching would be a way that I would be able to still be a part of the game that I loved. And teaching was pretty fun. So, you know, that's where I got into education because I wanted to coach.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it started. And as for going to Corvallis, I went to Corvallis because Mike Doherty was one of the best coaches in the state. You know, we used to play against him, had some real battles between South Salem and Corvallis. And, you know, he's a great coach. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go someplace where I can learn.
Is he the winningest coach in Oregon still?
I believe so. Okay, yeah. I think so, yeah. Potter up at Jesuit probably has a chance to beat him. He's if not still, then he's number two. So
he's not a name that's around anymore as much, and you know, younger people are not going to know who he is. But what are some lessons you took from him in those? How many years were you there?
I was there for two.
Two, okay.
Yeah.
Were you on his staff or were you on a lower level staff?
The first year I helped out, the JV team primarily. Their coach is a guy by the name of Steve Kunkey. Great guy, great coach. Then the next year I helped out the varsity. And they had great team. You know, John Cardi was playing for him at the time. I don't know if you know who that is, but he played at Cal. And Corvallis was
loaded back in the 80s.
They
right?
were, yeah. You know, they were winning the football titles and the basketball titles. And I think one year they won all three of the state championships in the same year. And you know, you had a lot of Oregon State coaches coming in. And most of the time, you know, the coaches, they'd have kids, and then those kids they'd come to Corvallis. And there may be, you know, a few kids that moved in that somehow they showed up somehow. I don't know.
It used to happen, did it?
No. But anyway.
Doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, no, it never happens anymore. You know, he was, you know, he'd won a state title at McNary already, and he'd won, I think he won one in, he'd won two more at Corvallis. My junior year in high school, they won the state title. They were 22-2, and my South Salem team, we were the only two to beat them. So they beat Beaverton in the finals that year. And then I think he won again in 80 or 81. So he had three state championships going into it. And the year before I got there, I think they got second. So he's had gone several seconds after that. So I think he ended up with only three, but he had several teams when I think they ran into Kevin Love once.
With Oregon City.
In the Oregon City.
They were team. Close. They might have got second 1 year with Oregon City.
I think they did. But, you know, Mike is he was extremely demanding and great attention to detail. Just he did a good job at being able to, you know, develop things that would use the skills that the kids had. But and kids played hard. You know, in a lot of ways, you know, he was old school. Definitely, you know, he changed over time. You have to. I mean, he was still coaching just until a few years ago. So, you know, the things definitely changed. But, you know, he had really good players, and he expected a lot, and he got a lot out of them. And sometimes he, you know, guys would get upset. But, you know, I think, you know, having people push you and expect a lot out of you is something that makes you grow and makes you improve. Yeah. So, and he didn't have any problem doing that. So both he and Canton Wine, who I played for at South Salem for a year, and then I played for Barry for a year, Adams, Canton Wine was like that too. And he was intense. He was a competitor and he wanted to win.
What were his practices like? Was he spending, was it, I mean, because now, I think there's a lot of individual skill based, whereas before maybe it was like we're gonna work our sets, we're gonna work our team defense.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of he did a lot of shell drill and breaking down some of the defensive stuff, closeouts drills, different closeout drills. He had this one really cool thing, and I've always looked for it and I could never find it. As they got going into the season, especially later in the season, he had somewhere found a rim that you could actually put on a basketball rim that would shorten the diameter of, you know, what it would accept through it.
Yeah.
So it was probably maybe an inch taller. So the top of the rim was a little bit above it, but it would only let through like, maybe a basketball and a half.
Okay.
Instead of, you know, two balls can go through at the same time. So it made the guys really concentrate more. We shot a lot, competition drills, you know, shooting. But, you had to get the ball up if you're going to have a chance for that dang thing to go in because he shrunk the diameter of the hoop. But he did that in some shooting things. I also thought that was kind of a cool thing. They scrimmaged. They were well versed in their offensive. He did a few set plays, but they ran more like the old high low offense. He had two, you know, usually had really big posts. When I played in 84, the year that they won the state title, they started 6'10, 6'9, 6'4, 6'5, and 5'10.
Not bad.
That's not bad. That's bigger than most college teams.
Yeah.
And the next year after that, Cardi came and they were 6'10, 6'9, you know, 6'5. And yeah, they were, I think they got second in state that year. They were, they ran a lot of the old high-low. I don't know if ever... Yeah, you saw a little bit of that with UConn.
Yeah.
And they get to the high post, and then the post, low post flashes across, and they just dump it down low, either with a bounce pass or just directly to him if the post doesn't, you know, chest him as he comes across the key and just flashes in the middle. They just dump it right down to him, and they'd score. So a lot of that type of stuff.
What did you take from him when you... You know, when you became head coach, did you take anything where, like, I remember this from Doherty and now I'm going to implement it here? Or was it just so long ago and you'd already been grown in your craft and you had already had your approaches?
Well, I was the JV coach for like 13 years.
You had a lot of time to develop.
I had a lot of things. You know, you take little things. I think I took something from Canton Wine and from Barry Adams and and Mike and obviously Larry. So I probably just the expectation of detail. You know, Mike was really demanding that way. I would change the message. I wouldn't, you know, the not necessarily the message, but the approach,
yeah, yeah.
How you would try to communicate with them was a little bit different. But, you know, he wanted things done a particular way, and they were going to be done that way. And that was one of the reasons why they were so successful.
Yeah. And then you went to coach with Gar McNary.
Yep.
Right after that.
Yep.
Would you say it was a similar style or not? Because some of the things you're talking about with Coach,
No, not even.
No. So Coach Gar was much more passive than
he was. Coach Jordy. He was a lot more warm and fuzzy. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I'd hate to see Coach Jordy.
Yeah, well, there were times when I played for Cantwine, I would, for whatever reason, I didn't have very good practice, and he'd really gotten after me, and I'd come home and. My dad, you know, he usually would come pick me up from practice, and you know, how's practice, you know, that type of deal, and he'd say that I was lower than whale poop, and you know, whale poop is the lowest that you can possibly get because you got it goes to the bottom of the ocean, yep, so yep. That's pretty dang low, but.
You get fired for that these days.
Yeah, you probably will. That was my dad. So.
Oh, that was your dad.
Yeah, no, that was my dad.
Coach Cantwine.
No, Coach Cantwine. No, that would, no. But, yeah, it was, Larry was not that way. Larry okay. was, definitely had his expectations and he would get them across, but the way that he did it was a lot different. Yeah.
Did you get your approach to game planning and scouting from Coach Gar, or was that something that you just kind of, knew was important maybe from high school, your playing experience too?
Well, Doherty scouted quite a bit.
Okay.
We watched a lot of film and we went and watched games and there isn't anybody better than Gar at being able to, you know, the scouting report. We had a form we used to fill out, and you know, that thing was, it was so cumbersome. Sometimes you're looking like, where am I going to put this or where am I going to put that? So most of the time I would, you know, I'd have certain pages open cause I knew where I wanted to put certain things. And then I would just write things on the back of it and then put it where you wanted it. So you'd have it. But yeah, you know, everything from, you know, can the guy go both ways? Is he predominantly right-handed? Is he predominantly left-handed? You know, what, if you watch high school players, most of them have on the offensive end, they have tendencies, you know, yeah. Like I used to tell you guys, you know, like a guy's going to have a certain number of moves. And if you can be able to know what those moves are and anticipate them, then this is what's going to happen. It's a huge advantage. You know, today I see a lot of kids, they let the kid do the same thing over and over and over. And it's like, holy smokes, man. You just, but, forcing a guy to his weak hand, low posts, a lot of low posts like to turn a particular way. If they get the ball, they're going to turn to their right. You know, they may fake this way, the other way, but they will always turn to their right or they'll always turn to their left. You know, do they, what do they do? You know, do they pull up, like shoot the pull-up jumper? Are they a spot-up shooter? You know, if we can get them off the dribble, are they a lot less effective? You know, those types of things. Both Doherty did that. You know, Larry, his scouting reports were exceptional. So
they set the bar, huh?
Yeah, I would say it, you know, just, I mean, I'd done it so long with Larry, it was pretty well mimicking, you know, what Larry had done.
Yeah, mine were mimicking what you did, so it was the third
generation. Well, it's the, and I think he got a lot of his from Cleghorn, so, you know, so anyway.
One thing I thought was great was we knew the other team's offenses as good as ours, I felt like, and that really separated us, because talent wise, we didn't have a lot of separation. We were good, but you wouldn't look at us and say they're extremely talented. But we knew what the other team was going to do most of the game, and that really helped us.
Yeah, you know, if there's just a lot of extra time really goes into it. We play on a Friday and Tuesdays in those times. Most of the time was Tuesday, Friday games. And, you play the game on Friday and you try to relax, but usually by the time you're going to bed, you're starting to think about the next game. Mm-hmm. And, my kids were little. So Saturday I usually tried to reserve for the fam. But then Sunday, it was usually going up to, what my wife called the cave, and the bonus room had a TV up there and a VCR, and I would go up there, and we had game tapes. I had ex-players. I'd send my dad, I'd send my brother to go and watch. You know, I preferred to have at least two and sometimes three. And then you just break those things down and try to see, you know, obviously their inbound plays, the things that they like to run, off of that, you know, what do they do against man to man? What do they do against zone? You know, you just kind of pick up, the tendencies of the team, and then you write the scouting report. And sometimes, you might be able to get to the point where you're looking at, you know, Friday's game. But usually Friday's game was, you know, you did that Tuesday when you got home after the game. Yeah. Or sometimes maybe, you know, you get up early on Wednesday or spend your lunch and part of your prep period and then go home Wednesday night and get ready for Friday's game. You have the scouting report ready and so you can get it to the kids.
Well, the amount of time it takes is why I'm not coaching right now.
Yeah.
I'm not devoting that time right now.
Yeah, you got young kids.
At some point, I might devote that time again.
Yep. Yeah, it's a time sucker. There's no doubt about it. To do it well. I used to, my wife always used to say that she could tell when I had left the season had started, we used to start in early November, and she would say, you know, you're gone. I can tell. And
that's funny because my first year not coaching, Bethany looked at me in like November, December. She goes, I can tell you're not coaching this year.
Yeah.
You're like actually not thinking about basketball.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's addictive. It's, I really like the preparation and the practices and, trying to figure out, you know, how to use the capabilities of the kids that I've got to provide the best chance for them to be able to win, you know, whether that be, you know, something that we're going to do offensively or defensively. I would have usually no problem going to sleep. I can maybe even after a bad loss, you know, I would usually be able to go to sleep, but my insomnia was on the other end. So I would wake up 2 a.m, 1:30 a.m. And I could basically tell I'd have 60 seconds, maybe 2 minutes. And if I could keep my mind calm and I'd have a shot at being able to go back to sleep. but if it started to think, then it was over. And I would just lay there and think about, okay, how are we going to defend these inbound plays? You know, maybe what's a new set that we could put in to take advantage of a particular weakness that the other team has, or and I would just think, and that is it's a challenge. It's like I said, it's a puzzle, and it's addictive, I think. Anyway,
it is. Well, as players, we thanked you guys for a lot of things, but we never thanked you for the time you took to scout. That was just, I don't remember us ever saying, you know, coach, thanks for giving up your weekends and your nights and your early mornings to scout teams. We just assumed like you just knew this stuff and it was out there on the paper.
No, it was, December was brutal. Cause, the games would start in early December. And so you had the first, 3.5 weeks. You had tryouts, and you know, then you got people kind of into shape a little bit. And we had really good football teams at McNary at the time, so sometimes we didn't get our our football kids till late. But then December would roll around, and you'd have your own games on Tuesdays and Fridays, and then you know, we had either, you know, Larry usually put together a schedule of all the other teams that we were going to play, what their schedule was, and then we would sit down in early December and we would circle
the games you could get
to. So we would drive to Eugene, we would go to, obviously, to Portland, we went all over, and you usually would do that because, you know, other teams would, they may play their game on a Wednesday or a Thursday. And so you'd have practice, and then you'd get in the car and you'd run down to Springfield to watch Thurston play, or you'd run to Barlow to watch Barlow play or whoever. And then you're getting home at 11 at night, maybe a little bit later. And then you get up, go to work, and you do it all over again. So the only nights that you'd have free were pretty much Sunday, because sometimes the games were on Saturday. Sometimes teams would play on Saturday. So, and then you remember you have practice every night. So it's like doing another 40-hour a week job other than your regular 40-hour.
Would you say 25 cents an hour? You got paid for that?
Yeah, maybe. Something like that. But you don't do it for the money, that's for sure.
It's a little easier now with NFHS and Huddle.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, if you're doing it now, There's a difference between seeing a team live and seeing a team on video. And you can't quite get the feel for what they really are unless you're there. So do you think you'd still go watch all the games, or do you think you'd rely more on technology?
I would probably go watch the teams that we were just about ready to play.
Okay.
I don't really know any other way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to you can't really – you know, you can't know how kids react to, you can't really get their facial expression sometimes. You know, we would know, you know, they call out inbound play number one. We would know exactly what they were going to do. And we would tell the kids, okay, one, you know, they're going to screen for the screener. So, you know, you're going to get through the first one, you're gonna switch the second one.
Dude, you're still scoring on screen for the screener, coach.
It kills me. It absolutely kills me.
And every time I see it, I think of you.
God.
So Coach Lischel didn't see that one.
And then they do it again and again. It's like the kids just stand there, like they just let it happen again. Oh, it's just boy. But you know, one of the things that we always used to do with the younger kids, I don't know if you remember this, but you know, we used to, with the freshman level, we never let the kids zone. Never.
Yeah.
They could never zone.
Even JV probably.
Every once in a while. If the team was not very good,
okay,
you know, and they just, then Larry would say, okay. But if the team was halfway decent, they were not going to zone.
Yeah.
Because you needed to learn how to play man-to-man defense. And Canwine was that way too. When I played at South, freshmen always, man, the sophomore team. They had a sophomore team at that time. They always manned the junior, the JV team always manned. And then he was 100% matchup zone. But you need to learn how to close out. You need to learn how to move your feet. You need to learn how to jump to the ball and do the different things that you need to do. And so, you know, those are, you know, just when we were going through it, one of the things when I was the JV coach was, you know, I'm trying to get the kids ready to play for Larry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know exactly what's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, kids are going to be expected to be able to follow a scouting report. And so usually I would get the inbound plays of the other team, and we would go through and you know, prepare the kids. That was the very first thing of like, okay, you know, when they call this out and they do this, we're going to switch this, or we're going to double that, you know, and see if kids could learn how to, you know, execute it, or are they just going to be like a deer in headlights?
Yeah.
And then if the team was pretty good, then you could start to, the second time that you would go around and play the teams, because you play the, you know, there are nine teams, yep. or 10 teams, so you play 9 and 9. And so the second time that you'd play him, that's when you try to do some of the half court sets. Like, okay, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to run flex. Okay, so this is how we're going to guard flex. And see if kids could learn, you know, the progression of trying to figure out how to you know, do things either offensively or defensively. But that was pretty important, because if you're going to start off, and the first time you've ever seen anything like that is when you play for Coach Gar, you're at a huge you're going to be behind. And it's not always easy. You know, you think it'd be easy, but you're tired and, you know, you're thinking about other things and you're not concentrating. And so,
The players on the other team moving faster than the players you're guarding in practice.
Yeah. Yep.
Sometimes you can't stimulate it.
Sometimes you can't.
The players on the other team.
Yep. That's true too. Yep. Yep.
One thing you mentioned earlier was noticing, you know, the players you have and how to get the most out of them.
Mm.
And one thing I look back on your run as a head coach, you had 7 years, four league titles, right?
Yep.
Three groups, so one back-to-back, the last one back-to-back. So
yep.
Three groups, and I think all three groups were doing different things.
We did.
Offensively
and defensively. Yeah.
So I didn't see much of Phil's group. I was in college at the time, but
yeah.
I definitely saw a lot of those last two groups, and of course mine.
Yep.
What are the things you look at when it comes to, like, these are the pieces I have, this might work, this might work? How do you approach that?
Well, you know, it's very situational. So, you know, you're looking at, you kind of have an idea of the skills that the kids have when they're younger. And so let me just use it as an example. You know, the 08 and 09 team. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a team that was not physically, you know, extremely dominant. There's no doubt about that. But the one thing that the kids, they passed fairly well. And there were a lot of them that could, you know, the ability to pass was there. More so than, you know, some of the other teams that I had. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some kids that, and they could shoot. Most of them could shoot. They were all about the same size. So, and I had thought about running that motion offense for, you know, a long time. I was, the team that was always the hardest for us to play was always Roach's teams down in Churchill. You know, they'd run that damn motion, and you couldn't scout it because they, you know, there was nothing to scout. You know, it was just fluid, and the kids reacted based on, and, you know, so they were very hard to guard. And so, you know, I just, you know, I don't know if you remember, but we, you know, when those kids were sophomores and they were playing varsity basketball, and we slowly put that thing in. And then I think the first time that we probably worked on it for a month and never used it in a game, just doing some of the breakdown drills. And then the very first game we played Redmond at home, who had just thumped us when we went over to Redmond. And we beat them. Probably didn't have any, you know, it was a great win for the kids.
Yeah.
And
probably made them believe.
And it made them believe. Yeah. That's a bit, you have to get the kids to believe. So, you know, for that group of kids, I just thought, you know, if we try to do some of the things that we had done with Phil's group, Matt McCollum and Miller and Isaiah and Phillips, those guys, they wouldn't have been successful.
Yeah.
You know, your group was, you know, I'd coached you for so long.
Yeah.
You know, because I coached you guys when you were sophomores and then juniors and then seniors. So, you know, you guys were really smart and you'd played for a long time together, and we could run a ton of different things, and you know, there were guys out there that could really shoot the ball. So, you know, you're thinking, okay, let's use those skills to be able to run sets, to be able to get into it.
I think we had 76 sets.
Yeah, that's probably true. Close. There was a lot.
But we knew them all.
Yeah.
You could just yell one off and we'd be right
there.
Yeah,
I think we had, you know, we had probably 7 or 8 zone inbound plays, which, I mean, nobody has that many zone inbound plays. So depending on what a team, you know, how they were going to come at us, then, you know, where they would line up on the zone. Sometimes I would let Josh call it out because it would depend on where, you know, certain guys in the zone were, because I knew, you know, so, you know, we talked about, okay, if they're lined up like this, then this is the one you want to call. Yeah, I would not doubt it. You know, we had 4 different sets that had at least 4 plays in it.
10 series, 20 series, 30 series, 40 series,
and 50 series.
And then we put in a handful more getting into the state tournament.
Getting in the state tournament to mix things up. Yeah. So, you know, we would either, okay, we're going to run 20 series first time, which was 21, and everybody knew that. But you just say, you know, when you yell first time, is it 21, 31, 41, 51? They don't know.
Yeah.
So it was impossible to scout, other than maybe they might be able to, you know the formation. But, you know, that was your guys' strength. You could shoot. You guys were strong and you know, you guys passed well too. I mean, so those were things that I knew we could have success with. And then Phil's group, I mean, we got up and down the floor.
Yeah.
We really got up and down the floor. And, you know, Phil could run, and I just, you know, I talked him into running the floor, and we get the ball out to Phillips, and Phil would run the floor, and he had great hands, and Michael Miller would run to the corner, and Isaiah would be on the other side, and, you know, then we would score. You know, we had 3 or 4 guys who could really shoot and had size. And so we were able to take advantage of those particular strengths of the kids. And we run some set plays. We didn't run any motion. They were definitely the most fast paced team that I had, while we were there. And they were okay defensively. We played man mostly, but we didn't really press much. But we would get the rebound and go.
Yeah.
And we were fairly, you know, Phil was about 6'8", and McCollum was
right there,
6'9", 6'10". He was probably 6'10" by the time he was a senior, by the end of his senior year. And Isaiah was 6'4", probably. Michael was, you know, 6'1". Phillips was pretty
Schmitty.
Good.
Schmitty. Schmitty was 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah. Schmitty. Yep. And he was big. He was strong.
He hit the weight room too.
Yeah, he hit the weight room. And he really improved too. Mm-hmm. You just kind of look at the kids coming up and you try to be able to put them in a situation where they're going to have the chance to get the most success that they can. And as a high school coach, I really think that's the name of the game. I mean, unless you're going to have kids that are going to show up, that are going to, fill in holes, so to speak, to run your system, then
it's not as common anymore, is it?
No, was. But I just think it was always the best way to adapt based on this, you know, the skills. If I were to try to run a motion offense with Phil's crew, we wouldn't have been successful. Yeah. If I would have tried to get up and down the floor with the 08 and 09 team, we would not have been successful. So we always had great kids, and they believed in what we were telling them. And they bought into what we were trying to do, and that's another part of the job. But you have to have good kids, and we were fortunate to have that.
You've been out for a little while now.
Yeah,
high school game.
Yeah,
longer than I would think, because time flies.
Yeah,
but it does. When you watch games now, I think you watched a few more in the last couple of years with your nephew playing. What are some differences you see in style of play or style of coaching, even, that you see between back in the, let's just even say 90s, 2000s, early 2000s to now? And whether they're positive or negative, what are some things that you see? Observations from a guru.
Guru. Well, I would say there's positive and negatives to the game now, and to the way that the game used to be. I would, you know, I was telling you this earlier. I would really like for them to. I miss kids. This isn't high school ball, but you know, the pros or even the college. I really miss the fast breaks. Mm-hmm. That's something that kids, I mean, to watch the athletes at the higher level actually get out and run and be aggressive and go to the rack is pretty fun. I mean, you watch some of the Laker deals, or you know, the old Blazer team that won the title in 77, or you know, Showtime with Magic. You know, those guys, that's fun basketball. I don't really like the fast break and the guys go into the corner and do they just float and stand and wait. That's not a whole lot of fun, I don't think. But I would say top to bottom, you know, from the high school game, top to bottom, you know, the number of kids that can shoot is definitely better. You know, like your team, we had some good shooters, and that was really, that made us really hard to guard, because I think maybe somebody tried to box in one us, not even one time, or triangle in two us, and we just chewed it up.
Couldn't leave a guy.
You couldn't leave a guy. Yeah. No. Today, top to bottom, kids shoot the ball better. And you know, a lot of that's, I think, been motivated by the three and the range on some of the shots now, I don't know. I mean, they shoot them. I don't know if they shoot them at a high percentage, but some of them shouldn't be shooting them. But, that is, definitely, I think, something that's added. The kids are probably stronger.
Yeah.
The part of the game which we were talking about earlier of getting stronger, lifting weights.
It's expected now.
For the
most part.
If you're going to be good, you're going to have to get some size. And I think that, you know, if you're a young player and you're in your sophomore year and, you know, you're thinking you want to play varsity basketball, if you're not playing varsity basketball already, then I think more than anything else, you should get in the weight room. I would really like to see kids develop their game more than just going in and playing in AAU games. And I don't think they really get rid of some of the bad habits, and I don't think they really improve as much, and they spend a ton of money that you know, I think that they could spend other ways maybe, but just improving their game, you know, getting better at certain types of weaknesses, you know, whether it be their offhand or maybe a pull-up jumper, or, you know, improving their just their shooting percentage. So, you know, a lot of kids, they would come in when they're freshmen and they think, oh yeah, I'm a great shooter. It's like, okay, you know,
I thought I was.
So, then the first time that they ever have somebody take stats of how many, like, well, what do you think you're going to shoot from the free throw? Because we'd always remember the team goals and individual goals we always used to make. You know, you find a freshman kid that, you know, can shoot over 70% from the free throw line, that's getting a serious number of shots. That's really, really good. Usually it's 50. And if it's 60, then that's good. They have really inflated ideas of what the actual percentages are that they're shooting. You know, from the three, you should be shooting at least 33%. If you're not shooting 33%, you shouldn't be shooting it. And that's one of the things I do notice in the game, is that you have some kids that shoot it that probably shouldn't shoot it. Mm-hmm. Just because you're open doesn't mean that you should shoot the ball. Kids should stay more to their strengths. Doesn't mean like the next year they can't, you know, if they work at it, they do something to invest in themselves to be able to improve, then I would have, you know, obviously no problem with them shooting the ball, because you want to win. So strength, outside shooting, you know, top to bottom, there's some really good shooters in the past, but there's just more and more of them now. Balanced. It's more balanced.
Yeah, there's more threats out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Overall.
The game now is the one thing that's really hard to, if I was watching a young player and the one thing I could tell if a kid was really had a chance to be really good was whether or not he could pass. You know, if you look at a young kid and he can pass the ball, that's really, really rare. And it's a really hard skill to teach.
Yeah.
Because usually for kids that can pass, the game kind of slows down for them. That's probably, you know, I don't know, people have heard that before, but if you know, the game slows, for some people, the game slows down. It's almost like they can see what's going to happen before it happens. And sometimes they are, because they can anticipate, you know. And as you increase in the level of play, the amount of time that's open to pass the ball or to shoot the ball or to jump to the ball or to, you know, whatever it is, it becomes less and less and less. And you've got to become, you know, really much faster at it. But not a bunch of great passers.
Yeah.
You know, the dribble is so, you know, people dribble first and try to score first instead of trying to shoot. Or try to dribble to, you know, to draw and then to kick. And a lot of times kids hold the ball too long. You know, they should pass it before they do. And then they end up in a double team or a situation where there's contact. And, you know, especially if the kid's not very strong, he's going to have a hard time getting it to whoever, or the passing lane shuts down or whatever. But I'd like to see more movement in the game.
Mm-hmm.
A lot
of stand and screen.
There's a lot of stand. And watch. They just stand and watch. You know, guys, even guys, you know, like fast breaks, they don't really run. They just kind of, I mean, not everybody, but a lot of teams, you know, you get people that are just kind of watching the guy just, okay, what's he going to do, instead of get out and get open for him and get ahead of him and, you know, have him kick the ball up the floor and get a higher percentage shot. But, yeah, you know, just the movement. You know, if you play people that are, and you're, you know, if you're playing somebody and they are just as physically talented as you are, and you're relying on the dribble, then it's going to be a dogfight. If you are better than they are physically, then you're going to beat them. If you are not better than they are physically, you're going to lose. So, what movement, I think, does is movement can be able to allow for you to have an opportunity to create space to get shots or to put the defense in a position where they are off balance or, you know, they're too far off of you or whatever, so that you have a chance to be able to score. And if not, then, you know, if you do get the ball, you might end up drawing two guys to you, or they try to switch, and then you have a chance to dump it off to, you know, somebody else that's wide open to create a high percentage shot, because it's about math. You know, it's about percentages and getting good looks and easy looks. And you can, I don't know who it was, what game it was in the NCAA tournament, but one of the teams came out in the first half and just lit it up. I think they shot 70% from threes. And some of the shots weren't, you know, they were contested. The other team really didn't have that many. They didn't shoot as well, but the shots weren't really all that contested. And that's not what you want to see as a coach. You're thinking, okay, you know, are we going to be able to shoot 70? And, you know, I mean, we're playing, because statistically it's not going to continue.
Yeah.
Whereas if the other team, they may be getting, they're getting easier looks or better looks. They're not falling yet. But statistically, those have a better chance of being able to go in than you know, something that's really a lower percentage type shot. So, and the team that, you know, that was shot 70% wasn't able to continue, and they ended up losing. But, you know, screen and roll and spreading the floor, the dribble drive. It has its time and its place. I love dribble penetration, especially against pressure defense. Mm-hmm. But it just seems that the shot selection is not very good a lot of the time. You know, they get in and they draw contact. A guy will go in and he may get around a guy and he gets his shoulder around him and he's got guys that are coming in to, you know, try and stop him. And all he has to do is pull up and shoot a 15-footer, an 8-footer, you know, do a jump stop and just elevate. You're going to shoot a wide-open shot. But they continue to bring the ball into the pressure and physically get in there, and then they try to throw up a shot. And it's just like, well, that's not a very statistically a great shot. You can shoot a lot easier, you know, uncontested shot that's going to get you a higher percentage, which, again, you're going to win. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are physically, again, bigger and stronger, then okay, then maybe that's something you can do because you can absorb the contact and you can, you know, be able to finish the play. But eventually you're going to run up against people that are going to be as good or better physically.
You always told us that.
Yep. You can beat, you know.
I said, what are you talking about? It's my everyday. I mean, someday it's like every day in practice.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, like with you, or kids that are physically not as strong when they're little, they learn how to play the game. Mm-hmm. And the kid that's King Kong, you know, is in the 8th grade and the 9th grade, and everybody thinks he's going to be this all-star. He never learns how to play the game because he's never had to. He can always just physically do what he wants. And he doesn't know how to move without the ball, or he doesn't know how to, you know, do certain things that other kids are forced to do because they have to do them if they're going to be able to compete.
Yep.
But then once the physical strength or the size kick in, then, and you know how to play, now that kid is going to kick the crap out of the kid that was really good in the 8th grade. And that's why a lot of those kids never end up playing. So, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. You know, if you like to play, keep playing, you never know. You continue to grow and you know, just improve a lot. Some guys improve a lot in college. Like you continue to play and got a lot better in college and. You know, that happens. You know, guys aren't shaving until
they graduate college.
Yeah, until a freshman or sophomore year in college. So, and you know, you just keep growing and growing. Coach Gar was that way.
Yeah. I read that little thing you sent me.
Yep. My wife's dad was that way. You know, he grew a lot in college. And, you know, so you start off AC Green. Yeah, there's another example. He played at Benson. I think he was the point guard for Benson High School as a sophomore.
And sprouted.
And he was 6'10 by the time he was a senior. So he went from point guard. He had point guard skills. And then he ends up, you know, being the post on their team that won the state championship. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you take a kid that's got those kinds of skills and then grows and still, you know, is not losing any coordination or strength but gaining it. It's like, whoa, you know, and look what happened. So, so those would be my comments. Defensively, I would like to see kids, like I said, you know, just, you know, don't get beat by the same play over and over again. You know, don't get beat by the same, you know, whatever, you know, closing out. Is you can tell kids don't work on that much. You know, it's the hardest thing to do, I think, at that end of the floor, is to be able to close out and keep a guy in front and, you know, be able to absorb at least 2 dribbles, you know, push him out 2 dribbles instead of just giving him. It doesn't matter what defense you play. If guys are going in straight lines, you're not going to be very good. But that takes time, and you have to devote a lot of time and practice to that. And
when you always challenge us to watch a lot of games, watch college games.
Yep. And
not watch the ball so much.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of what you're talking about, a few friends of mine, we always talk about how kids are putting a lot of time into the game now in the off season, but it's always with the ball in their hands.
Yep.
And they're not putting any time into the parts that, I mean, how many, unless you're the go, you know, unless you're that guy, the number one guy, you're not going to have the ball in your hands that much.
Mm-hmm.
So what, I mean, how can you develop those aspects of the game where you don't have the ball or you're on defense and, you know, I'm not around a lot of AU programs, but I don't think they're spending time on closeouts and shell drill.
No, you know? I mean, you're not going to do that in the off season, but, oh man. Well, like, let's say for instance that you were to get a group of kids together, like with an open gym situation, you know, are you going to play 3-on-3? You know, we used to, I don't know if you remember, but we used to make rules like, you know, you can only dribble, you know, you got 3 dribbles.
Yeah.
If you don't score after 3 dribbles, you have to pick it up. And if you take the 4th one, it's a turnover. And so there's certain things that you can do in your playoff games or your pickup games with other kids, that there's certain rules that you can put in there that can be able to really promote certain things that you're trying to promote. So, you know, like if you're going to get ready for hoopla, you know, that would be something that you could probably try. You mean, you get together, you're going to play 6-on-6 or 3-on-3, got 6 guys, and, you know, try to work on some things that are going to be able to, you know, score points. So like with UConn, I mean, look how many points they scored off of people switching the screen up top and the guy that set the screen flash into the hoop. Now, I know the guy's 6'10", in some cases, but
they had a 7'4" guy behind him too, and they still made it work.
And they still were able to do it. But I mean, they would flash, you know, and it takes 2 guys. I mean, it's, you can't, that's one of the things, you know, it's, some kids can't do it. They just don't. They can't do it, or they're not very good at it. But if you take kids that are really talented and they can do it, they are going to be really, really hard to beat because, you know, they're going to be able to read the situation and capitalize on what you're doing to them defensively, to try and stop them. And they're going to get high percentage shots. And if they are really good shooters, or, you know, they can go to the rack, then you're going to end up, you know, you're going to end up winning. So I would, you know, so just from playing with it, you know, if you're playing individually, if I was a kid, you know, shooting the ball, less dribbling and more catch and shoot. You know, it's too many kids, they'll actually catch the ball. They'll put a dribble on the thing. And then try to make a move with a guy, and then they'll shoot the same shot that they could have had, which would have been a wide open 3 from that spot usually, if they would just caught it and shot it. You know, it's like, you know, way too much of that. So, you know, catching and shooting, they spin it, run to it as if it was passed, and then, you know, elevate and shoot, coming from different angles. You know, we shot a lot of shots based off of, you know, where you're going to get your shots in the offense, though, whatever you're running. So mm-hmm. if you know what your, you know, what offense that your coach is going to run, then you're thinking, okay, where are the looks that I'm going to get? And those are the places that you want to shoot from. You know, there's that, watching teams that do certain things. So like at the pro level, like if you watch the Warriors, they have pretty good movement. UConn had great movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there wasn't, you know, some of the stuff that you saw with some of the other teams.
But you got to watch off the ball. You can't just focus on only the ball.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's too many kids just stand and watch the ball and then let the guy do what he's going to do. And then he's going to pass it to you and then you're going to do what you're going to do. Nah, that's not, I don't think that's the way the
game is. Well, and the beauty of technology now is you can watch the game, defense work, how they do that. You can rewind it right there. And
yep.
You can go back and see.
And rewind it and, yep, slow it down sometimes. Yep. Yeah. You know, some of the back cuts, you know, those kids know that the guy that's guarding them is watching the ball and not mm-hmm. seeing them. you know, if you just sit there and watch the ball and they watch the ball, you don't even know whether or not you're open or not. But if you glare, you know, if you look at the guy, you can see, man, he has no vision on me right now, you know, then you can back cut and boom, you know, you can get a wide open shot a lot of the times that way. But learning how to, you know, I think I read Jerry West's book, you know, his autobiography, and he, you know, he's playing on basically a dirt, and he's in West Virginia. He's not very, not, they have no money, and he really doesn't have any players to play against, for the most part when he's little, but he just envisions himself in certain situations, and he just practices certain situations, certain shots, certain moves, and over and over and over again, just by using his imagination. Of, okay, this is what I'm going to, you know, I'm going to come off of this pick, you know, it'd be a wide curl and I'm going to get it and I'm going to, you know, go hard to the hoop and then, you know, I'm going to pull up and shoot a 4-footer or I'm going to go all over the rack. I mean, he would play in his head, kind of the situations. And then that's what he did. So I thought that was pretty, you know, especially for a kid that's so isolated, you know, West Virginia is not going to have great hoops, you know, up in wherever he was from, was a little tiny community. So there wasn't like, there was a lot of people to play against, but, he just did it hour after hour. So
this has all been good.
Yeah.
And I don't want to keep you too long, but I got to ask you this last question, maybe not the last question, but starting five during your coaching career,
oh boy,
Salem players. So what, 81, 82-ish to 2009.
Oh man, 81, 82.
When you got to Corvallis to when you retired to McNary, starting five.
Man, I, that's a hard question. Knows
you got to give it your best shot.
No, no, actually, I don't. I don't. You know, there were just a lot of really good players. You know, different positions. You know. There's just, yeah, there's so many. I mean, I don't even know where I would start. Even if you're just, you know, trying to just list just McNary kids, that would be tough for me to do too. Yeah, I don't know. Some of the times you know, like it's different stages. So some guys have great high school careers and then,
yeah.
And then
specifically high school.
Yeah.
What are some of the names that stand out where you're like, that kid really stood out? Like, you know, for example, point guard wise, you're looking at guys like Casey Flicker, Jeremiah
Dominguez. McShane. Yeah. McShane. Yeah, those would be three pretty good point guards.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, you had Kittner and Shiloh Rowland, and you had the Fish kid. Allen and John was 6'10". He played at BYU. Yeah, I think his team got third in state. They lost in a semifinal game that they probably shouldn't have lost. But you had John Carty down at Corvallis. Bart Knitzer, he played at he played at Cal. Cardi played at Cal. You know, kid that I played with, Scott Miner, he played at Stanford. He was a good athlete. Could really jump. He could shoot. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's just been a lot of really good teams. A lot of really good players. The Kubler kid played at Hawaii. Yeah, yeah, he had a great...
He kind of came on late too, right?
Yeah, he did. Bloomer. Yep. He and Shiloh, I think, were the two best players in the league that year. You know, he went on to Hawaii, and he might even got drafted.
I know he was on the summer league roster for the Blazers.
Yeah.
At least one year.
So, you know, there's a kid. You had... let's see... Taj was a load to handle at North. You know, the Hills kid, McKay was a good ball player. Josh Unruh was a great ball player. Joe Douglas is a great Paul. You know, Zach. I mean, there's so many kids. It'd be really hard to do. But,
okay, well, I will make you do it.
Then. Yeah, yeah. I better not even make us. I probably embarrass myself. So, it's, you know, it's fun to watch. You see the, you know, the old players and the new players come in, and you know, some of the different things that each, some of the unique skills that some of them had. You know, Phil was, I don't think I've ever, Phil was, Bruce Reed at Corvallis, at Crescent Valley High School, said he was the most, how did he say it? The hardest to stop of any of the kids that he'd ever seen. And he was there in the, cause he was coaching at South Albany in, the early 80s before he went to Crescent Valley. You know, Phil was just so athletic and could do so many different things, and he could shoot. So, you know, from a standpoint of just that, the body and the, you know, he would have to be mentioned. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just a lot of really good players out there over the years.
What are some games that stick out in your memories? I have a handful where I'm just constantly thinking about it. I don't know why, like, that was like 20 years ago. I'm still thinking about that game. But
so, like, which ones?
Well, I always think about the Jesuit game,
mm-hmm.
because we lost by 7, I think, and we had, I don't know how many turnovers, but
we had a few in the first half.
Yeah, bad ones.
Yeah,
I think about that one. I think about the second South game, just as we put it together for that one, and that was kind of,
yep.
I always thought we clinched the title in that game, but we had like
eight, a long ways to go.
Games to go.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I always thought that was our league title game, but
no,
that one sticks out. And the two when McKay games stick out because
yeah,
we should have lost both those games, to be honest. You know,
but, yeah, Josh hit a three in the game at McKay. They were really good. You guys wouldn't believe me, but
most talented. Yep. You know, whatever record team they are in the state,
they were they had some players.
They did,
and they were athletic.
They were a big good size overall.
Yep. They were pretty good.
And I think about the Wilson game.
The
last one.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were more talented than us, but, you know, we make a few more shots, we're right there.
We had a chance to beat them, yeah. Really hurt us that JJ broke his hand.
Yeah.
So our leading scorer broke his hand playing a
dodgeball, right?
Dodgeball. He broke his right hand. That's just a shooting hand, so... That was a blow. You know, who knows what would have happened if that wouldn't have occurred. But, yeah, you know, the Jesuit game, I tried to get us to play some of the Portland teams that I knew would press and do some things to us that we just don't see quite, especially the type of press.
Yeah.
So, like, Jesuit, they just, they would run and jump us, but they would, you know, what we were more used to was seeing the trap come at us.
A set trap.
And they came at us from behind. And eventually we figured it out, but they'd already made their run, and it was really, yeah. So, you know, if you play a team like that and they get a 12-point run, you know, it's really hard to recover from being able to beat them. But they... early on in the game, you know, Josh would get the ball up and he'd run that thing up that right sideline, and then they'd go and trap him, and either he would turn it over or the guy that he passed to would take it because he had to get rid of it sooner than he wanted to, and it kind of took us out of the rhythm that we wanted to do.
We could never. I watched it actually kind of recently. I was like, we didn't run any offenses. Nope. We couldn't in the first half.
Nope. No, the best thing that we ran was, if you remember, was we ran two for Ruffner and just let Ruff run on that baseline and spread you guys out. And he would make something happen, usually passing the ball to somebody that was wide open, or he'd make a shot. But that was really the most motion offense. I mean, that was all instincts off of all four of you, because you would, you know, if he would penetrate, you would float down into a seam and get ready to shoot, or you and Malik would flash into short corner, or, you know, be in a position to be able to get the ball because your guys had come over off of a tight curl or something like that, and he would dump it off. But I know we went up and played in the Grant tournament. Remember that in the winter time?
We had a close one against Grant.
Yeah, we did. And then I tried to get us to play Jesuit, but they didn't want to play us.
It's because we beat them in Summer League.
Yeah, that's true. We did.
If I didn't want the chance that we'd see them and then see them again.
But that's, I really wish in 2019 we would have had a chance to get the tournament for the guys.
That would have been special.
That would have been special. Just wasn't meant to be.
Wasn't meant to be.
Sometimes those things happen, but yeah. South Salem, I can remember the South McNary games were usually pretty big games. Mm-hmm. And the year that South won the state title with McShane, I think Mike had, he hurt himself, something happened, but he had to sit for the first half of league, and he came back towards the last quarter, and the league was really tough that year. There were like Crescent Valley, which I think Kirch was playing for Crescent Valley at the time. They didn't even get in, and they were good. And I can't remember who the fourth team was.
Sprague.
Or third play. Yeah, West Albany, maybe. I don't know, something like that. But anyway, South ends up getting... We play them. We have to go over and play them at South. This is second to the last game in league, and we're playing South Salem and at South, and they have Thalo and they have McShane and have a really good supporting class. There's another kid we didn't mention, Thalo.
Yeah, Thalo
played at Washington.
Conversation.
Yeah, dang right. At that time, we had. That was Sean Gar's senior year, and Sean got spinal meningitis. I don't know if you remember that, but he almost died. And Sean Kittner was a sophomore, and we had Josh Benedict and Tim McGann. It was my JV team from the year before. So we had a really good senior group with Bolander and Peyton and Gimmel and Danny Espindola, and they had played since they were sophomores, and they got fifth in state. We kept 13 guys on the varsity, 12 of which were seniors. And in fact, Gar kind of wrote about this in his paper. Yeah,
was Kittner 13?
Kittner was on the JV team. Okay. He was a freshman, and so. We decided to go this route and to be able to, that was one of the things where we practiced together. But by the end of the year, the JV team, we would do tons of competitive drills, game-like drills like blitz drill and or certain drills, even scrimmage sometimes. And Gar would sometimes give us a little bit of a lead, sometimes not. But we actually beat him. In a couple of the scrimmages and the contests at the end of the year. I think Larry said that he thought that was probably the best JV team maybe ever. I mean, I had to play them in positions that they'd never played before because otherwise we would have won by 50.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I think we only had, nine guys on the team and the 10th guy was our manager. Because we had to have enough to be able to run to practice, but every kid could play, every single kid could play, and so it was. And you had kids that, Kittner was the three man, and Luke Atwood was the point guard, and Ryan Dirks was the shooting guard, and Benedict and Tim, and that was pretty good ball club. But we go and play South Eugene in the playoff game, and. Step goes up to Gar. He's the coach at South Eugene. He says, "What are you doing? You must be a crazy man. You've got 12 seniors and one junior on your varsity. Are you just like, are you going to retire? Or are you going to quit? I mean, what's the deal?" And he says, no, we're going to do this. And well, anyway, they end up getting second in the league that year when Bolander's a senior. And then that next year, my JV team and Sean Gar because I was the only kid that was coming back from the previous year were the varsity, and they ended up winning the league. And we had to play South at South with McShane in the second to the last game of the season, and it was a barn burner, and we beat them. And we were playing really, really well. Then we had to play McKay at home and play Danny Aguilar, Danny, I think. Aguilar, yeah, he was another good player. And we beat them. And then, God, we were just playing so well. And we got up to the state tournament, and Josh Benedict got sick, and he didn't practice except for like one day before the tournament started. And they zoned us, and, you know, we could not hit a shot. I mean, we were just feeling it. It was a good team. But anyway, that South game was one I'll remember for a long time. That was a pretty intense game, really high caliber, pressure. You know, kids were – it was just a well-played game.
Well, those are the days when the JV game would fill up because
– Oh, yeah, the game – you'd halftime. Yep. I mean, everybody in the town was there.
Yeah,
it was fun. You had to get there by the JV, the halftime of the JV game, if you wanted a seat in the lower section. That's for sure. Yep. So the JV games were always kind of fun because you definitely had a crowd by the time fourth quarter rolled around. So, yep.
Well, a lot more things I could ask you, but it's bedtime.
It is.
Got to get you out of here. Got to get me out of here. But thanks for being on. Thanks for talking hoops.
Yep.
Always a great time.
Yep. It's good to see you, Nose.